The Honest Wargamer, an honest and independent show run by gamers for gamers. We bring you the latest in critical meta discussions, zany list tech, and deep dive discussions about the hobby as a whole. We are supported by our fantastic patrons and Twitch subscribers. If you'd like to support us and join the team, that would be awesome. Don't forget all you hydro homies, stay hydrated. Now get yourself comfy. Rob is now here for today's episode of Stream Streak.
Tonight we're gonna party like it's Stream Streak 199. Hello, welcome to the Honest Wargamer. I'm your host, Rob. Welcome to Stream Streak Day 199. I'm joined by the immutably gorgeous and transiently... I don't know what word was going to follow
it.
But
stop it's with the
Owen. It's Owen Jackson. Hey, bud, how are you?
I'm all right, man. Yeah. We were just having a nice little sing song there, weren't we?
We were.
That was fun. I'm okay. I'm a bit tired, so I was just saying, I don't think I'm on top form today. But I'm looking forward to talking about the tournament results, seeing what's winning on the table. So yeah, cool. How are you? You good?
I'm great. Great, as you know, I've been doing a bit of DIY, and then I've been DIYing it all up. Loving that. I've also meal prepped this week, mainly because everyone in the Twitch chat has been a bunch of bastards and keep talking about my peanut butter and jam sandwiches. So got the slow cooker out, meal prepped. I've got myself some veggie meals for the week. Very excited about that. Myself, and also we're a little bit late. I'm sorry, everyone, because the bar where I stream from has been closed since lockdown began, and the homeless people in the local area have started to camp in the front, so I have to kind of like have a negotiation. It's fun. It's like barter. I'm like 3 pieces of chocolate and maybe move out the way of the door for a moment. It's like they're kind of like a toll, which is very fantasy-esque. I'm very much enjoying it. It's very fun. How are you? Are you well?
Yeah, good. The sun is shining today. My neighbor's cat is on the shed as I look out the window. It's glorious. I think I am going to go and stride forth into the parks and streets of London in a bit, because it's been raining for about 8 days solid, isn't it? It seems to... How's it been in Nottingham? Because it's been just like biblical down here
yesterday was lovely. Today is lovely also. So but the past couple of days have been a bit ropey-dopey, which has been weird. Thank you to everyone for joining us live. Goober, thanks for subscribing. Thank you so much. I also want to thank everyone who is on the Honest Wargamer Patreon. Today we're going to be talking again every Monday, the Age of Sigmar tournament news. We do have some special graphics that we're going to do at the end. So we're going to go through tournament results and lists from around the world. And at the end... if you're listening to the podcast and you're staying hydrated, big love to you. We will be talking about some images on screen, which you won't be able to see. You obviously can watch this back and check it out towards the end, hopefully. So that'll be really fun. Tournament results from all around the world. Owen, in a hilarious tweet I saw at the weekend, someone said, I can't believe I'm seeing a lot of KO and Seraphon do well. And you would have been like, oh boy.
Where have you been? Yeah, and like eels seem to be really good. Yeah, the Eidneth Deepkin have got a really good war scroll there. That's another hot take, which came out of the left field. Sorry.
It's okay, I nearly spat my coffee everywhere. It's a hot take.
It's a bit of hot tea.
I might do a show where I just read through Facebook comments. I might just do a post on a Facebook group and just be like, what does everyone think the most competitive stuff is? And then just do a show where I read out the answers, because I imagine it will fucking make me cry laugh. But that's a different show. Anyway, hot takes. Let's talk about some of the results from around the world. So, in Norway, which apparently, either Norway or Finland, there's a conspiracy theory that they don't exist. I don't know if you know that.
What don't exist?
Norway or Finland, there's a conspiracy theory that they don't exist. There's also a conspiracy theory that Australia doesn't exist and everyone from there is an actor.
Yeah, but these conspiracy theories are getting pretty wild now, right? Lizards, Pizzagate, you know, I think anything's possible. But I reckon if you look at maps and talk to people from the Scandinavian area, I think both Norway and Finland are both officially countries. Yeah, I think we're. I think that's a pretty safe one. I'm not sure about all the other conspiracy theories going on in the world, but yeah, I think it's real. And they had a real Warhammer tournament then, did they?
Yeah, they did. They did. King in the North, the world's most northern event hosted by the Frost Lords. Yeah, in Tromso, 22 people. I think it was just a one dayer. However, it was won by. Get ready for this. Stjarn Engbritsen? I'm just going to go for that. Anyway, he took a Anvils of the Heldenhammer shoot cast list. If you were listening to our... If you go back and listen to the show where I talked about the list archetypes, you'll hear about this. But it was 3x3 Vanguard Raptors, and it was riffing off Big Sean from New Zealand's version, where it's the three chambers, or it's the three battalions making a one-drop shoot cast list. Have you seen this before in action?
Yes, Greg Shelton took that to one of my tournaments, I remember, and I, as a spear player, had to play against it. So I think you've got shoot cast. I think this is the next level. This is snipe cast, because it's very much like it's not taking that big brick of nine, is it? It's taking the MSU threes, and if I'm not mistaken, the battalions give them an extra shot, so they're two shots each.
It does.
And that extra shot is in the hero phase shooting as well then, right?
I don't know if it is in the hero phase. I think it is. Like, because I did an entire show. If you want to go back and listen to the show I did with Big Sean about this list months ago, you can go and, well, it might not even be that. Time seems to be, I'm like, someone's like, it's Monday. I'm like, yeah, like the 200th Monday of 2020. I'm like, welcome to the fucking world.
I know what day of stream streak it is, but I couldn't tell you what the date is right now. So, yeah, I think that's the only consistent in my life. But yeah, no, it's really good for picking out those characters, right? That build, so it'll collapse all the support. And I mean, have you got the full list there? Have you just got the
name? Aquila, Deathly Aura, Night Venator, Night Venator, Night Venator. So triple Venator, which is a little bit more unique, or at least different. Normally, you see an Azeroth in there for reroll ones, but the Venator is really important because what he's really looking to do is just like absolutely punk something with the star fated arrow. So like he's got great ability to like deal with stuff with the Vanguard Raptors, but the star fated arrows from the Venators are also going to just do some solid work against monsters if you end up running against them, which is pretty good. So 3x5 Vanguard Hunters, 3x3 Aether Wings, 3 Vanguard Paladors, which is a great little pick, and then 3x3 Vanguard Raptors with long strike crossbows, which is all the punch.
Yeah. That's where the output's coming from, and then those Paladors can zip around and claim things. It is a cool list, and it is a cool way to play the game. I mean, if you turn up with a load of small heroes and they all get shot off in a couple of turns, it's a bit sad. But that's no different to Technado, Croak. You know, there's a lot of that around, isn't there? So
this is more definitive, right? Like you're definitely going to kill the thing at range that you want to kill, pretty much. And it's a nice hot pick as well. Like, it's a really nice hot pick going into things like the Lumineth matchup. When you do discuss that, I mean, it's obviously Teclis. It might be able to punch Teclis out. Like, that's the thing. But you'll be able to deal with some of the key units in that list. The bodies being fairly light, and it's a one drop, so you get the choice. So you'll be able to punch into the Kalathar, which is like a big pick if you can get into it. Yeah, and then also just punch into the Sentinels. Is that right? The Sentinels is the shooters.
The shooters. Yeah, absolutely.
So you'll be able to punch into the Sentinels and deal with a lot of that range. And they're paying a premium. Like, the Sentinels are great, but they're also, they've got a price on them. They're not, you know, cheap. So being able to reduce that output, like, as much as possible. Especially when the Sentinels really shouldn't die. So if you can get them early turn one, really they're paid for and put in the list, hoping that they do 5 turns of output. Like, as opposed to, like, that early one. So just being able to remove them early would be big.
I mean, looking at some of the games at the weekend, like as soon as Teclis gets that the aura up, the 5+ feel no pain, or the 5+ DPR, and then they have the opportunity to sort of double stack the Sire save. If you can alpha them, because most of the Teclis lists are 2-drop, aren't they? That does really threaten that build, and I suppose Croak to a certain degree as well.
Being able to punch out the Star Priest, maybe even the Astroloth Banner Bearer, some of those key pieces, which, like, I've been told reliably by Seraphon players are so important for the list to win. anyway,
it's like the most fine tipped spear that snipe cast list, isn't it? You have got other lists. It's like KO can put everything they want where they want, but then they don't necessarily have the range that those long strikes do. So it's a very specific build, isn't it? But fair play if he won his games.
In second place there was Ogre Moor Tribes, again bold ahead. We looked at a list like this a bit last week, but different, which is nice. So last week we saw that big brick of six Mournfang, which I thought was super cool. This is different again. We've got a Frostlord on Stonehorn. It's got the Brand of Svard, a Metal Cruncher, of course, and another Frostlord on Stonehorn with a Mount Trait Black Clatterhorn, which is pretty much the two things you almost always see. Like, if I was starting writing the cookie cutter list for Ogre Moor Tribes, that's where I'd start. Then there's a Huskard on Thunder Tusk, which is different. You don't normally see that. A Slaughtermaster with the Lore of Gut Magic, which is Blood Feast. And then three Icefall Yetis, which is very different. You rarely see Yetis. Wow. 12 Ogre Gluttons, 6 Ogre Gluttons, and obviously he's got the Morpot in there as well. So generally, some of those things, especially that big brick of Gluttons, is unique. But you can see they... like that other threat, very much like that big brick of six Mournfang, there's that third threat in the list, right?
Yes. Yeah. Because I think they now that Ethereal Amulet's gone, those Stonehorns do kill a lot, but they can actually die now. So it's quite nice to just not be all in just on those monster trucks and have some a pack of lads as well to as another threat, as you say. Yeah, cool.
And then in third place, it's I would say that's nicely different. I think this is fun. And then in third place is a Fire Slayers list. Don't tell me what's in it. it's in Herbdar. It's got a Magma Droth. It's got a Rune Smiter Battlesmith, which does not have the Norsidian icon, which is very interesting. It's got the artifact, the Grimwrath Berserker with the artifact, the Tyrant Slayer. So there's no Norsidian icon in this list. It is a Lords of the Lodge battalion as well, but it's 2x20 Hearthguard Berserkers and 5 Hearthguard Berserkers, but then some cheeky gun haulers in the list, which is nice. Cheeky gun haulers. Mm. Now, I've actually heard that internationally, Ironclads are sold out. Like, they are unbuyable. You can't buy an Ironclad to save your life. I've heard.
Wow.
So if anyone around the world knows where an Ironclad is available for purchase, I'd like to try and do some community liaising across boundaries and borders. But pretty tough. But maybe you're seeing a lot of people playing with their Fire Slayers because they just can't play with their KO because they can't have a...
Yeah.
I mean, they're also good.
I still don't think the Ironclad's going to be more expensive than a Gargant, though, right?
We haven't done that news yet. But that's okay. But seeing as that's so great work on that list as well. So that is, and in fourth place was Legion of Sacrament, fifth place was Skaven Tide. But it was a 22 people event. So we don't have to go deep dive into it. But awesome. Really nice also hearing that that's happening at the most northern fringe of the world. Obviously, very exciting over the next two decades as. The climate change affects us all. We'll all start moving further and further north. So that might become the epicenter of Warhammer. So well done to those guys. Let's just jump into the news really quick. Twitch chat and Owen, let's mix it up. Let's just keep it fresh. We found out the price. Gargants are going to go on pre-order this weekend. The Sons of Behemoth Battletome. I honestly don't care about the rules section at this point because it's a destruction battletome. I imagine they're going to be terrible. But very excited about the front end. Want to read the narrative. How do you feel about it?
I have to admit, cards on the table, I'm not a huge fan of the aesthetic. I think it's cool, and I like the idea of the sort of bringing one into your army. But I don't like sort of mindless violence, and it seems a bit like mindless violence sort of thing. So and also I think I'm with Heywo. I think that the Ale Guzzler Gargant is one of the worst sculpts that GW do. It's almost like it's reaching forward, trying to tell the sculpt to stop what it's doing. It's like, no, you're making me ugly. I think... 100 and what's the price that's being bandied around?
It's definitely £120 UK retail. So that's UK. So a lot of the guys in the chat are trying to work out what that might be in Oz. Apparently, also just keeping up with some of that. Yep. Apparently, there's been no ironclads in America for over 6 months. They are just leaving money at the table. And then Iron Gutsman says taking bets on Gargant's price in Australia being $350, like per Gargant. Don't forget, they also, not only is their exchange rate nuts, but Games Workshop charges a premium on top of the premium to purchase something in Australia. So if you do have any friends in Australia who you would like to help send some presents to for Christmas, in brackets, feel free. We should do that as a community. Just fucking crowdfund that way. Yeah, just be like, don't worry. Everyone in the UK, just like, don't worry, bros. We fucking got you. Yeah, wherever you are.
Then again, they've got like lovely weather and loads of space. Maybe they should be kicked in the balls on Warhammer pricing. I don't know, because it's lovely over there, isn't it?
Interesting thing about West. I was talking to a good friend of mine last night, Diffy, who's based in Victoria. He was telling me, we were just having a catch up, and he was telling me what's going on over there. Perth and Western Australia are completely like a locked state. So inside Perth and Western Australia, you're good. You can just roam around, fuck Mad Max it, whatever you, which is basically what they do. Yeah, but you can't leave, and no one can come in. Which is just wild. Yeah, yeah. But like, it's massive. It's fucking, it's huge. Like, it's huge. It's like a full place. I think they have at least one bar. anyway, 120 quid seems a lot, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they often sort of qualify that price by saying about the research and development and the design and everything. So they're going to have amazing rules, aren't they, Rob? If you're paying that premium.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Listen, Aussie bros, I love you tons, and I'm super sorry about that. A load of people got thoughts about this in the chat. It's cheaper to go to the UK and build the shit and take it home, says Moon Tyranid. T-Man Cash's Gargant's going to be $200 plus Canadian, $40 more than the Command Edition for 40k starter. So you could start 40k or buy one Gargant. Now, I know Nathan would say, and will say later on, buy one Gargant. I mean, obviously, he's like, why do you want bullets? What a ridiculous game.
when you can eat things and put them in your pants, right?
Exactly. And a Castellan is $280 Australian, and that's £100. So by my calculation, we're fucked. It's this stop hammer time 30, which is a bit tough. Okay, anyway. tough times. But, like, I'm very excited about the narrative. And most importantly, Owen, importantly, and again, I don't want to derail this chat, I'm very excited about being able to buy the book on my iPad, which will be very rare, because in 6 months' time, 8 months' time, we won't be able to do that for Age of Sigmar either. How do you feel about that? The fact that you... Do you pick up your books digitally, or do you buy the paper books?
I like the thing, to be honest with you. So I've got my like little library of books behind me. But I do think that, yeah, going to a tournament and having it all on your iPad is probably the way forward. Do you think that the way in which they're managing the 40K sort of releases is a sign of what's to come for Age of Sigmar then?
Yeah, I couldn't think more that that's their plan, like to bring it in line. So I assume. And again, you can always buy the paper books, but currently it's that you have to buy the paper book to get the digital book. That really fucks people over. Like Dayton, who was on the show yesterday, he lives like up a mountain, not in a cave, in like a log cabin he built himself with like love and power. Just unbelievable. Just the strength of 1,000 bears. So it takes a long time for the book to get to his local gaming store.
Right.
Which again is stuff we don't really tend to think about generally. We expect them all to, I mean, we're in the UK, so we're super lucky. It comes from China, doesn't it? The books.
My view on the digital download might be slightly tainted by the Sylvaneth book, because you know they had that glitch where they released it super early and it was just so incredibly disappointing that I was like, well, if this is the future, I'm out. Give me my books.
Fair point. Absolutely. We all own a printer anyway. An intern, Matt, great senior. Managing is a strong word for what they're doing with 40K at the minute. That's also, yeah, agreed. Anyway, let's move on, shall we? So over in Sweden, Fantasia Fanatic. I was meant to go there. Damn it. Damn it, COVID! Like an old man just screaming at the clouds. COVID!
Abe Simpson vibe. Ah!
COVID! Anyway, it was, thankfully, it would have been super boring based on the winning list. No, I'm joking. I'm obviously joking. I'm so sorry. First list was, it was won by OCR Bone Reapers. It was Mortis Praetorians. Owen, take a guess at what's in the list.
Catacross.
Nailed it.
A Soul Mason.
No, a Bone Shaper and no other characters.
Okay, so Mortex Shield Corps.
Nailed it. Well done. Guess the battalion. Yeah.
And then it's probably two crawlers.
Nailed it.
40 Mortec and two tens.
40, 20, and a 10. That's pretty fucking impressive. That's pretty impressive. Can we all give Owen...
It's a pretty limited book, though, right?
It's an amazing book. Like, it's an amazing book. Like, they're like, and again, big love to the winner. It's such a good list. The reason that Owen's able to guess it is this is the list. If you're going to a tournament or you're playing some good Warhammer, this is the sort of list you should be running for Bone Reapers. There's no questions. I want to run, as I've told you before, the Nagash Death Rider list. I think that would be super great in Staliot Lords. Do I think it will win 5-0? No. I think it might go 3-2 sometimes. Like, I'd also like to really experiment with Stalkers and Harbingers. Do I think that would win? Also, no. I just want to experiment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Stalkers in Staliarch Lords is really good because they've got their command ability. You spend it in the hero phase and then you can reroll runs and charges. And because they run and charge in Staliarchs, like six Stalkers is a lot of fun to put them around.
And you can put them in the battalion where you can get the pregame move.
Yes, the Deathglaive. We say that and that's cool, but you're right. Mortis Praetorians, Catacross at the hub, give out all the buffs, loads of skellies.
Yeah, Catacross making stuff minus to hit, key units making them minus to hit, stealing your command points, that's super important as well. Like, it's just brilliant. It's really, really good. Scrutiny Hugh, thanks for subscribing. So that was first place. Over in Sweden. Sweden also, like, a super competitive meta. Like, no matter where you are in Sweden, those guys are smart, on the ball. Any of the Nordic countries, Norway as well. Like, Finland, not really sure, because they love swans, but whatever. Anyway, in second place, there's the Fangs of Sotek. So it's Croak. Second on with Skink Chief, who's definitely making, like, a big impact in lists recently. Skink Star Priest, Skink Priest, and a Pterodon Chief. Which is, again, pretty nice and unique. 30 skinks, so not even a block of 40. Can you take 30 skinks? You can? Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Two tens, one salamander. No, three salamanders. He's written it the right way. So it's just three salamanders, not 12 salamanders, which is actually really three with skinks. And then nine pterodon riders, and then vortex and geminids. So pretty standard, but the swing things there are the pterodons. And that Stegodon with Skink Chief is making an appearance in a lot of lists at the minute.
Yeah. Is that? Did you say that's in Fangs of Sotek?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So has it got the cloak of feathers?
Is that no, he's got no. The it doesn't say the no. The Pterodon Chief has got the serpent god dagger. Oh, there's also an Astaroth banner bearer in there as well. I think I missed that out.
It's nice to see the pterodons, though. I mean, it does show that, and when we talk about Hammersheim as well, like, the you can get an excellent list without necessarily spamming the most powerful things, such as the sallies. But yeah, the pterodons give them a hell of a lot of reach, right? And then with the chief, they get +2 to the mortal wound roll. Is that right? So it's on. Is it on two ups then?
It's on two ups. Yeah, it's nine. Yeah. It's nine two ups that will cause D3 mortal wounds apiece. And then they've also got the Sunleech Bowlers who also benefit from, which is D6 shots, and they benefit from being able to get Skink Priests to do the mortal wounds on sixes to wound. And then you've got charging, so you've got shooting, mortal wounds, combat. So that, like, nine block could just do a ton of stuff.
So hold on, a Seraphon list that operates competently in all phases. Never.
So new.
Some would say dominates most things.
It would be really cool to see that on the board as well. There's a Stegodon, there's nine Pterodons. But anyway, so that's in second place. Then in third place, there was another Seraphon list, but this time it was Thunder Lizard with Croak, Engine of the Gods, a Skink Oracle on Troglodon, Skink Priest, Skink Starseer, 4x10 Skinks, 1 Salamander, not 3, and then 2 Bastillodons in the Thunderquake Temple host. So a completely different build, apart from obviously still having Croak in there, taking out the third place.
Yeah, Thunder Lizard double Bastillodon is really, really good. I mean, if you get double turn by that, it's curtains, really, because it's, what's that, 18, 36, that's 72 shots with 2 damage each.
Yep, and if you play against demons, you're having a great time.
Ooh, yeah, that's...
And it just goes to show you the strength of that book. We've not even cookie-cuttered. There are some key elements in those books, but we've not even cookie-cuttered, like, the top version of those lists, and they're still taking it out second and third, although they didn't win. That's important. They didn't win. However, over in France, at the French Single Cup, oh, Le Français, I'll do this all in French, in first place was...
Please don't. Okay, I'm sure the viewers will agree. I'm sorry.
Bonjour, viewers. In fourth place was Abarak Ziflam. They have Elder Master and Dirigibles. I can hear it's not French.
Talking of which, actually, I think the Dirigible Suit and the Fate Master dude are finally available to buy outside of Aetherwar, which is a little note. So we might see more of them on the table now.
Yeah, that is that's fantastic, especially the Fate Master less so, but the Dirigible Suit, excellent, because I think he's a key piece for a lot of these lists. So, I mean, obviously you still can't get an Ironclad to go with the list, so...
Details.
Yeah, details. So, Endrum Master with Dirigible Suit, Aether Chemist and Aether Navigator, obviously as the Ironclad in the Iron Sky Command, which you see very often. However, it's a little bit different, which is quite nice. So you've got 10 Arcanauts, but then you've got 6 Endrum Riggers and a Gun Hauler, 6 Endrum Riggers and a Gun Hauler, and then 6 more Endrum Riggers. So 18 Endrum Riggers in total, which is pretty wild. Like, and that is unique. Normally you see more bodies in the Arcanauts. You tend to generally see some frigates. The double Gun Hauler and 6 Endrum Riggers is super different, and that's really nice. There's also Spell in a Bottle, of course, and Warp Lightning Vortex, just to really mix it up, just to roll some dice and change things around.
And is that Zilphin, did you say?
Yeah, Zilphin, yes.
Yeah. So Yeah, it's so good just to know that you can do a really, really powerful thing to your opponent. And it just messes with their deployment so much. So that one, yeah, that came first in
that
this
came
tournament.
First. That was Andrea Filhol. I hope I said that right, and I'm sorry if not. In second place was Lod. Or his name is either Lod or Cataclysm Lod. I don't imagine either of those true. Anyway, in second place, he had Mortis Praetorian's list, Catacross, Soul Mason, 5 Death Riders, 10 Mortec, 40 Mortec Guard, a Harvester, just to mix stuff up, and 3 Crawlers. So no battalion in that situation, but like that 40 is staying around a little bit longer thanks to the Harvester, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think 40 with a harvester with 40 is overkill. I think a 40 can survive a lot of stuff on its own. 20 in the harvester is quite nice. What were his heroes again? Sorry, did he have
Soul Mason
K-Man?
And Catacross? That's it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so yeah, he's got enough to feed the three crawlers. I think two crawlers and then some infantry and stuff. I like that more. Three is really good. In singles and in teams, it's just you're just making your opponent roll saves, and it's
it's not the smartest play, but it's definitely happening. Yeah,
you're just
lobbing some rocks, and your opponent's got to deal with it, which is very French. You know, as an English fella, surely we're very aware of the French fellas throwing rocks at us. We throw rocks at them. Like, you know, like we've been doing it for generations. Not so much anymore, but you know, eventually. Post Brexit, can't wait to build our like man the wall, Owen. Start throwing some rocks across the channel, the sling. I don't know how.
I don't have anything to add. Sorry, Rob. just carry on with your international relations. That's fine.
Yeah. Oh, I like the anyway. And then in third place is Le Sorofor. Thunder Lizard, Low Croquet, Le Skink Stasia, Astralot Banabir, Skink Priest, a new edition, Celestron Prime, and then and then triple Bastillodon, two lots of 10 skinks. So very light on the skinks, which is very different to what you normally see, and five Saurus Guard. And then Geminids, of course. Wow, look at this. Ravenax and Ashen Jaws definitely had 40 spare points. I was like, what could I take?
That's a bit of a self-nerf there, isn't it? It's like, I'll just chuck it in. I don't need a triumph.
Look at it's bound as well. It's bound, which is interesting.
Well, maybe that's his screens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's got no screens, really, other than the skinks. And he's not summoning, is he? Because he's Thunder Lizard. So he's just going to go... Here's my wall, and here's my... Hold on, that's another 30. That's another 18 shots going... Oh, God. Yeah, three of them going twice.
Three Bastillodons going twice. It's fun.
Oh, I think there's a brilliant comment in the chat there. Croak, monsieur. That's...
Well done. Nuns of Guns, congratulations. Nuns of Guns, you currently... Gitly, I'm very sorry, but you did well with Crawl Intentions. Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, but Croak, monsieur... Very good. Lord Croquette is also excellent. So triple Bastillodon, Thunder Lizard, and then Croak, Starseer, Astroth, Banaversky, Increased Celestial Prime. Celestial Prime, obviously a key pick for a lot of those lists at the minute. So that was first to third over in France. There's a lot of events happening in Italy. Just to pump through this at the Italian Masters, although I think I covered this last week. I did. Yes, this was the... So I covered that last week. So that was Boulderhead took that out. Fire Slayers in second and KO Ziflin in third. Just let you know that it, almost always you see in a KO or a Seraphon list in the top three. Something to be aware of for everyone. Sweden, or maybe Switzerland, was a third place. It was a first place, sorry, Zeench list. You had, it was a Change Host, of course, with 2x6 Flamers. One Exalted Flamer, 2x10 Pinks, Changeling, Changecaster, and Law of the Change. The Changeling being a pretty different pick. You don't generally see the Changeling in that list. Everything else, you definitely see. In second place was Nurgle, and it was Archeon. Nurgle Archeon is always good. Chaos Lord, Chaos Sorcerer Lord, Glotkin. Loving that in there as well. 40 Chaos Marauders, 20 Chaos Marauders, and 5 Chaos Warriors. You've been loving a bit of Archeon generally. Like, do you rate him in Nurgle?
I think Zeench is probably top pick, it pains me to say, and then Khorne. Pask played Nurgle in my tournament the weekend with the Menagerie list. I think this one sounds like it's all in on getting Fleshy Abundance off on those 40 Marauders, isn't it? Like having double wound Marauders from the Glotkin's pretty nice. But it's still, there's no casting bonuses, is there, which is a shame.
No.
It sounds cool.
Yeah, it's also really nice seeing that drop in points has also been a really big deal for for the Glotkin. Like being able to see him on the tabletop, see those spells cast. Like he's got access to a great command ability and a great spell. He's just not very survivable. He's got a lot of wounds, but he doesn't have like a 5-up DPR or Disgusting Resilience. He's got no good heals. Still cheaper than Alariel. Like still better. so sorry. But it's a great list, right? In Munificent Wanderers, and you can do so much with it. Chaos Sorcerer Lord can reroll saves if you want to. On those Marauders, you can make them two wounds each. You could make them do Blades of Putrefaction. If you get that off, you can make those Marauders go through basically an army if you got it off, which I think is interesting. And they're faster than you would see because, the thing that you don't want to let Marauders do is also have run and charge.
Yeah, just when a minimum 8-inch charge is not enough, they get the run and charge too. Yeah, it is wicked. Yeah, and that'll catch people down because it's still, you look at a Nurgle arm and you think they're going to be sort of like slowly kind of like, it's like those zombie films where they mix it up and the zombies aren't like, oh, they're just like rapid zombies. Well, these are like, you know, it doesn't seem narratively correct that they would be so motivated, but maybe when the Nurgle juice gets inside you, then, you know, it's like Red Bull or something. It just kind of,
So if you guys don't mind me being a tad crass, maybe skip forward a few seconds on whichever device you're listening to if you don't want to hear it. But if you've ever needed, like, you've ever needed to go to the loo, Owen, that's the fastest you've ever walked, at least.
Wow, yeah. Like,
so that's a very different, it's a very different energy that you get.
So what you're saying is that when the Nurgle juice gets inside you, the reason why they move so fast is because they're just trying to find somewhere to urinate it out again.
I wasn't thinking front end, but either way, they're trying to get it out is the point.
All ends, Rob. All ends. Total extrication.
Anyway. And also, there's definitely the touching cloth. And there's no... I think it's good. This is Rob's Glotkin spiel. Gitly, good one. Really good. Really like it. In third place, there was a Mortis Praetorians list, again from the OCR Bone Reapers. Catacross, Arcan, Kavalos Death Riders, a 15, 2 times 10 Mortec, and 2 Mortec Crawlers. So that Petrifex nerf made them unplayable in the game. Everything I've heard made them unplayable, apart from all of these tournament results they're posting.
Yeah, and I actually still think Petrifex has got legs. Just switching on -2 rend is still pretty damn good. It's kind of Catacross, 2 crawlers, and then, you know, season to taste, really, isn't it? It's whether you want the speed or you want big blocks of Mortec guard. It's just another way of getting +1 to save. But bringing in Catacross, like you've pointed out, denying the CP and just board wide -1 to hit, which you can double up with the Bone Tide Nexus. Catacross is worth it for the 5 RDP and the debuffs and the control, like for his abilities alone. So yeah, who knew? It's still good, right?
Agreed. Right. So we're now going to talk about Hammer Time 4, which is Owen's TTS event that he ran at the weekend. Sorry, Hammer Time 3. Hammer Time 4 coming soon. Hammer Time 3. Well, we're going to try something new on the show as we do it, because I've got some info and sheets to show you, which was some of the stuff that we were going to be using at the Super Series on the day, and you will see in the future at events. We just had a technical issue on the day, which sadly meant we couldn't use them for the first match for the Super Series, but we'll see them in the future. So there'll be some fun side by side. So I'm in charge of this. Owen, do you want to take us through the event? How'd it go? So it was a 3-dayer. But the important part was there was almost no Seraphon at the event, right? 3-day? 3-game, 1-day, sorry.
Oh, my God. If it was 3 days, Rob, we would not be talking right now. I would be dead in my bed trying to recover. There was a lack of Seraphon. I think, we talked about it on Friday with the list review show and how, people were motivated to perhaps take some different stuff. It's a bit boring just seeing the same stuff every week. We had 36 players, something around that. Did have a few dropouts through the course of the day for one reason or another, which makes things quite quite challenging. But I didn't put missions in the pack to kick the top armies in the balls, but I did want to challenge the lists that people are bringing. As a pack, we played Starstrike, Places of Arcane Power, and then the Blade's Edge. It was quite varied. There's a lot of challenges there. You've got to have good heroes, and your army can't necessarily castle. You've got to be able to be reactive with Starstrike, and then the Blade's Edge is just a great mission, especially as a last game, I think, because it's a real... it's a real thinking game, that one, in terms of giving away or taking the priority. So that was the pack. We played, and there were some surprising results. I'm not sure how you want to go through these, Rob.
So in first place was Mark Brooks' Slaves to Darkness list. So I do have some details on the sheet here for you guys to see. As you can see, it was a 2-drop list, right? It was a blood. He had 1 battalion, which is the Blood Marked Warband. But most of his units were in the leader role over battle line.
Yes.
So he had. Do you want to just run us through what there was in the list specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I did promised Mark that I wasn't just going to fanboy his list for this whole show, because it's pretty awesome and you know, there's so many good ideas in it. So yeah, Mark took a Slaves to Darkness list, and then the Bloodmarked Warband, which you can see in the battalions. Basically, that's if I run you through the list top to bottom very quickly, he's running Knights of the Empty Throne, which you know. So that was a unit of six Varangard. So Knights of the Empty Throne is the sub-allegiance, which you find in Wrath of the Everchosen. So he's basically dipping into two books here. He could have actually dipped into a third by bringing in some Khorne units or characters to. So it's pretty complex. But yeah, he's got six Knights of the Empty Throne Varangard. He has a unit of three Knights of the Empty Throne Varangard. And then he has two Chaos Lords on foot, a Chaos Sorcerer Lord, with the Mask of Tzeentch and the spell Mask of Darkness, which is the teleport, I believe. And then 3x5 Chaos Warriors with the shields, 20 Chaos Marauders with axes and shields, a War Shrine, and then the Warband and a CP. So essentially, as you say, it's a two drop. The reason why he's loaded up on heroes, and it's really good to see, be able to see the graphics to illustrate that, but essentially the trick with the Bloodmarked Warband is that whenever a hero from the battalion, so that would be both units of Varangard because they count as heroes, or the two Chaos Lords, whenever they kill a model, they can choose a unit wholly within 12 and give them +1 attack till the next hero phase. And the reason why this is so cute is because the Chaos Lords have a command ability to allow a unit to pile in an attack twice, and then the Varangard can pile in an attack twice on their War Scroll once per game. So essentially on the second activation, the ability from the Bloodmarked Warband kicks off. So I did some maths, and the big unit of six, essentially they are doing 36 attacks with D3 damage on the first activation, and then 48 attacks on the second activation. So they can chew through, and they pile in 6 inches. So they can chew through. So it's it's that. I know that he faced off and played against a couple of Tzeentch lists, which had very low armor saves. So the lack of, well, the -1 rend on the Varangard is mitigated by the fact that he was facing some pretty poor saves. But he also chewed through all the Hammerhallian Demigryphs on their 3-up save, -1 to wound. So I think I've just rambled at you, Rob, but yeah, that's an overview on the list.
That's great. Like, I it's nice also seeing, like, you rarely see those Varangard on the tabletop or making it into lists. And this Knight of the Empty Throne, I want to say a big shout out to my friend Joe Pagano, who rang me up to talk about it, which was like sweet as. And I don't know anyone, like, I hadn't seen it really being run. Maybe there were people running it. I think we might have seen Benjamin Sava running it at an event once with a block of nine, or maybe just a practice game. I think maybe when I heard about it, I rang him and we had a chat about it. But generally, it's a funky, funky list. And Mark, I think, has taken that list and improved it, or at least developed it, which is really fun, because it is, like, it's really, you make some big changes in that list. You know, he had 9 Varangard in a 6 and a 3. That's a lot of big changes. It'd be really interesting also if he brought any of those, like, if the 6 ever died and he brought all 6 back on a 5-up. Do you know if that happened, or we had that in the story?
I don't think that happened. I think they killed everything rather than dying themselves. Because the command trait Wall of Cursed Iron, that will give them a +1 to their spell ignore. So they've basically got the same spell ignore as Archaon now. So they've got a 4-up just straight up ignore. And then the Grasping Plate artifact gives them a 6-inch pile in. Now they have to be within 3 to proc it. They don't pile in from 6. But if you're going twice and you're going 6 inches each time and you're stacking up those attacks when you do, and obviously the aura of Khorne is giving him reroll ones to hit on themselves and +1 to wound. So they're 3s rerolling ones, 2s to wound, -1 D3 damage, and mortal wounds on 6s. It's a scary block, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's super scary. I've used it. It's terrifying. Meermouse, you only get 3 back. Thank you very much. He's in the chat here. So if we could, so on the screen, we're going to compare it to, if you don't mind, Alexander Sluka, who came in 4th or 3rd, I think.
He came in 4th, and he was one of the only, there were 4 players that went 3-0. So he was he came in fourth. I've seen he faced off. He beat Nighthorn, the Archaon Nurgle army. He killed Archaon on turn one, in fact, and then he beat the Thunder Lizard Stegodons as well. And he's playing that very the Zilphin with the Vortex, the sort of classic Zilphin as it is now.
Yeah, okay. So, like, I thought we could do... So, we've got on the screen, I think we've got the ability to compare these lists, these two specifically, because I think this is, like, a fun endeavor for everyone at home, and you could really understand what you're looking at, because they play significantly differently, so it's fun to see. So, as you can see on the screen, two drop for Mark's list, and the Carrigan Overlord's list was a four drop. There's most of the units for the KO kind of spread around between the different areas, whereas obviously Marx was like loaded heavily into that hero section, as we've discussed already. Now, if we move on to the next screen, you guys should be able to see it in a moment. But Mark, they have, and I have this kind of general opinion, that Age of Sigmar armies run between 110 and 140 wounds is generally where you see them anyway. But on this next screen, you can see that there was only 48 models in Mark's army, 61 in the Caradon Overlord's army, but the wounds difference was only 10. Mark had 10 more, he had 126 wounds, and Alexander had, so the Caradon Overlords had 116 wounds there. So this, again, very interesting kind of like breakdown of where you see those wounds and like... but would you say that that's what you feel the general wound counts is in lists that you see, or do you think it's higher normally?
In the lists that I write, they tend to be about 100 because I'm always trying to fit Archaon in. But yeah, you're right. I think it's a funny one. Like, I would actually say that probably the median, if that's the correct term, like of all the lists that come in, I think it's actually creeping up. When you've got things like the Blight King lists putting over 200 wounds on the board,
do you not think they're at the extreme end though? Like if you think about the Seraphon list, normally they have blocks of skinks, but they generally tend to fall around that 120. Even the Hearthguard lists like end up being around there. I feel like the Blight King list is specifically
be an outlier.
I think that's the outlier. I don't know if there's anything else that pumped. Even though, like, if we look at the Osiart list from lists that won today, they generally like tend to fall around that kind of 120 mark as my average. But I feel that the unique difference is bodies on the board. It changes the shape of the game, right?
Definitely. And I mean, I think looking at those two stats, Mark may have 126 wounds there in his 48 models. It'd be interesting to see. I'd imagine that with all the boats and then all of the lads that in Alexander's list, I'd imagine that actually has probably a bigger footprint than Mark's. Mark's is obviously a lot of elite stuff, isn't it? You know, you've got a lot of, you've got your Chaos Warriors on their 4-up save, you've got the Varangard on their 3-up save. And also Mark's obviously built in a lot of rerolls. You know, you've got your Sork Lord rerolls on a unit, so you'd imagine that Mark's list would stick around a lot longer unless Alexander's keeping everything in his boats.
I think that's a really interesting one. Just looking at the points attribution though, so where points have been spent across a list, because I think that's interesting. 59% of the points for Mark being spent in his leader section. And then Alexander's KO has just got a far more like across the board representation there in that kind of like in the points being spent everywhere, which makes sense based on what we've already seen. Now, this is where it gets quite interesting. It's not a particularly cast heavy game. There's one cast and one unbind rocking around for Mark. I think that's right. I think there's one. Maybe there's two.
No, that's it. You're right. Yeah. He's got literally the Sork Lord. That's it.
And then there's just one unbind for Alexander. So this will be a really interesting side-by-side if we stuck a Nagash in here or a Croak or one of the Seraphon lists. I think generally you would end up with a fascinating mix-up here, right?
Well, also, this just backs up the point whereby if you ain't got magic dominance, generally people aren't bothering with that phase, right? I mean, the Sork Lord... He's not. It's nice if he gets off the teleport, and it's nice if he gets off his spell for the reroll hits and wounds. But Mark has that inbuilt on prayers from the war shrine. And I think the Sorcerer Lord's in there really just to give out that free, you know, rerollable saves wholly within 12. So it's almost like these are little fringe benefits. And as I say, it really does back up the idea that if you're not Croak, Teclis, Nagash, or you haven't got an auto cast, then people aren't bothering in that phase, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And then one that we don't have a side by side of, which is interesting. This is a fascinating table for you guys to see. This is
on the left, we have an army which plays the game in the correct manner. On the right, we have a 40k army. I'm sorry, I don't mean that really.
No, I think not forgetting Mark's list and the Slaves of Darkness list, so the Knights of Empty Throne took out the event, and the KO list did not take the event out, but did go 3-0, is that right?
That's correct, yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so it's really interesting to see this side by side. It would be fun to see also a melee output list on this as well. I'm going to write that down as a note for myself, so number of like melee attacks available, because it would shift in this situation. But as you can see there, there's 169 shots per turn, and also brilliant that it's 169.
Yeah, man, I'm sure that the figures have been massaged a little bit there. It's like the old track and trace. Oh, wow.
But yeah, so but if you actually start to look at those shots, those 169 shots, 111 of them are in the 12-inch range. So obviously, if you include the move, it kind of moves into the 18-inch range in that situation. But that's like you would be able to avoid most of that shooting, and then between 13 and 18 inches, there's 34 shots, and it's only like, and then there's nothing beyond 24-inch shots, which is interesting. There are that might not be true because if there's an ironclad in there, but the 17 to 24-inch range, there's only 24 shots, so you're not necessarily being peppered to death from like
the arc when people play a lot of Arcanauts. I'm just bringing his list up. I think that there should just be a sky cannon shot in there on the 24 plus, but Thunderers are 18, aren't they? People bringing in a lot of Arcanauts, their pistols are designed to be outside of 9, so they can't shoot their pistols when they fly high. Mm-hmm. I think that does back up the idea that potentially if you can take a screening unit or a scout move unit, you know, your Untamed Beasts, you're my favorite unit, then you are going to be able to mitigate decent percentage of those shots on turn one. It's really interesting. This is the first time I'm seeing all these as well, actually. So I'm just as excited.
I do have the ability to change who you're comparing the armies against. So, like, if I just press a button, but I couldn't get the button to work, I was trying to do it before. So now it's not happening. but there is, it is possible, so that when we do the Super Series, the next one, so like when two armies pair up against each other, we'll be able to go, well, the interesting thing about this is the shot domination in this example by Alexander versus Marks, like none, but like, does that make sense? And then like so we should eventually be able to do some immediate side by sides when two people get paired against each other, which is awesome.
It's really interesting to see that you've basically got two armies, both won all their games, but two players both won all their games, and they have a completely different approach to how to win a game of Age of Sigmar. That shows that the mission pack and the game in itself is available for lots of different builds to compete in. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it, but you can still compete without bringing loads of guns, it seems, which is nice.
So could we talk about who came second and who came third? Because I think I've just had some help in the chat, so I might be able to just... I'll be back. I'll be back. You continue. Continue. Who came second?
So second was Antu. Gloomspite Gitz, Jaws of Mork. Mm-hmm. His route to second place involved beating Legions of Chaos Ascendant, and he obviously played that, so he knows that really well. That was the one with the Vortex and the double Vermin Lord, Legions of Chaos Ascendant, so quite light on bodies. And then he faced the Stormcast list with like 15 Sequiturs and 15 Evocators, and some little MSU units. Then he beat the Ogres in the last game, with the Blood Gullet Ogres. I think when you look at this, obviously we've got Philip came in third with his Lumineth, and obviously he's a really good player. But then Gits and Slaves to Darkness, you wouldn't necessarily expect those to be at the top. But I think in a one-day event with three games, I think because it's over five games, you might see those lists get knocked down into a 4-1 or a 3-2. But I think it just goes to show that player skill is really, that's just as much a factor as a really strong list. Like I say, Philip, Antu, and Mark are all excellent players. So even though they're bringing Philip, in Philip's case, is bringing a list he didn't know very well for the first time, and then in Antu and Mark's case, it's Gloomspite and Slaves. I think perhaps with Mark's list, there was a little bit of the surprise factor. People had never seen it before, and maybe the same with Antu's Gits. Fair play taking destruction to a 3-0 is and only missing out by a point. It's pretty damn solid.
It's very, very, very solid. And I have made bits of it work, but I've not. And also Gits doing okay is a big deal. Like Jaws and Mork, especially after they got dropped. Didn't they get a Vortex dropped on them turn one? Is that what I heard?
He did, yeah, exactly. In that against that Legion, I'd forgotten that. Yeah, that Legion of Chaos Ascendant. They dropped a. I think he had it around. He might have even had it around the Loon Shrine, or it was basically enveloping his whole castle. So he managed to break out of that, and take apart all the horrors and stuff. So, yeah, he did really well.
And if we compared, he had 164 wounds and then 69 models in that Gloomspite Gits list, which is quite interesting. That he's really pumped up that kind of like wound factor. So taking those things, like having those extra wounds on the board, I assume helps to a degree. Do you find that the TTS environment, having played a lot of TTS, is more useful for just playing the game? You're less concentrated on moving stuff around and you're more interested in like actually the tactics. Does that make sense?
It's give and take. There are certain things which are better. Oh my god, Nikos has pointed out that it's 69 models. Wow, we're just
I reckon Antu did that on purpose. Right? I reckon he did that on purpose. That's all I'm gonna say.
I'm not sure. I think what's really nice with that Gits, I think the one of the real you look at it and you say you've got X amount of models, but the fact that he can bring those back from the Loon Shrine, because you get your special squiggy Loon Shrine, don't you? And you can bring back half a unit. So he had a big unit of 15 bounders and another unit of 10. So just being able to potentially bring those back is a massive change, because I don't know how people don't play with armies with summoning. Like, it's such a crutch for me.
Just that late game. I just want that late game to be good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, is there going to be a Hammer Time 4? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think in doing a team tournament, and everyone's super pumped about that. So also, you don't know about this. I did mention it, but we're developing further the idea of Doom Wheel Death Derby. So I basically had like a massive chat yesterday with Mathieu, the guy who brought Skaven to the tournament, and he's developing a full rule set. So look out for, it's like a cross between Mario Kart, Age of Sigmar and Blood Bowl at the moment. That's how I'm going to pitch it.
So
we're trying to work on that. It looks amazing.
You're now a game dev. Congratulations.
Maybe. I don't know. I need something to fill my time, and he's the same. So we're going to work on that. It was a really interesting tournament. There were some ups and downs. There was one thing, right, Rob? This is peak tabletop tier TTS TOing, right? You're ready for this.
Yeah,
essentially, one player's internet was so bad that a la The Apprentice, I phoned his opponent on WhatsApp and then basically left the phone next to my computer for 3 hours whilst he spoke to his opponent through Discord on the...
Is this all that while you were downstairs putting on a shiny silver suit and shouting Hacker Man? Is that
that's exactly it? Yeah, but yeah, that was a really funny one. It was a funny game to listen to. It was a challenge. I don't know how to necessarily port over the idea, you know, your team tournament idea to TTS, because I think the pairings and stuff like that are really interesting. So we'll see. I'm not sure. It was great. It was a really good weekend again. Can I just give a couple of mentions? I've got a few notes on things.
Please do.
I think. He ended up not even in the top 10, but I do think we need to shout out Blagan, who was one turn priority role away from beating Philip Kartiev's Lumineth with his beasts, and he would have gone 3-0 then. He faced Thunder Lizards round one, then Lumineth round two, and then Lumineth round three, and he only just lost that last game, which would have been a pretty awesome result for Beasts of Chaos. So that was the dream died on like turn three priority, I believe. That's it. I think I just wanted to make sure that he got a mention because it was a pretty sterling effort. If anybody wants to sign up for the next one, I'm not sure what it is. We've got a really nice little community going in the Discord. Lots of people playing games and learning loads about the rules and stuff. So, I'm rambling, Rob. I'll do another one and we'll all have a lovely time.
Thumb up. I don't think you're rambling at all. And don't forget, Owen does all this off his own back to make sure people, especially when they're locked in, very much like I've been doing with the Stream Street, can still stay in love with the thing that they're in love with, which is playing games. It's also been, like, I think it's been some of the most relevant information that I've had when it comes to competitive gaming. That some of the results that we've seen posted recently in real-life tournaments have been based on some of the information I've been able to generate and gather, thanks to Owen and thanks to Adam and other people that have run TTS tournaments all around the world. So we've been able to keep the game that we love alive. Meeting up with each other is obviously excellent. It's even cooler that we get to do it on Tabletop Simulator and like play games with people from around the world. But I think it's really helped keep the game alive, which has been a really important aspect. So thank you very much from the whole community, if I'm allowed to speak for them. To
you're
you,
welcome.
For doing so.
You're very welcome. I'm part of the community as well, so we just want to keep us all together. It's pretty crazy times, right? So we just got to keep ourselves sane by pushing digital toys around. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, good. We had a question from Prop Joe. He says, are Lumineth as obnoxious in the game as they are on paper? What do you think?
No. I think that they've got some... It's really scary when you think about 30 or 40 Sentinels, but Lambent Light's only 18-inch range. So unless they're putting it through a portal, they're not going to get all those rerolls on that 36-inch or that 30-inch range. I think if you build a little bit of anti-magic in, maybe a one auto unbind once per game or something like that, just to shut down like a total eclipse or something, I think it's all right. I think Sire's the problem. Just when you line it all up perfectly and you go in and then they just go, oh, I'm going to be +2 to save. It's just a bit, and I've got a 5+ for DPI. It's just like, whoa. So that can be a bit of a problem. But I think overall the army can be beaten. It's they just want you to charge them and then they just punch back and then win in the late game. That seems to be the way that army wins at the moment.
Yeah, makes sense. Can I just give a shout out to my man Screamstar Iron Gutsman in the chat? I like seeing the Screamers. They did quite well from what I went 2-1.
2-1. Yeah, only lost out to Mark's Korn. He had a dream against a very good player, I must say, but he had a really good round one. So he faced off against the Thricefold. So it was like really good quality magic against all the anti-magic and the Screamers flying around, slashing everything up. It was cool, actually. I watched a fair bit of that game, and that was a really... And Stephen, his opponent's a good player. So, he had another good weekend, did Stuart. Didn't make the top 10, but he got another 2-1. So, Oh, actually, I've got one thing on that, Rob. I know we're well overdue, but I've got... So Kairos, this came up. and I wasn't sure how to run it. So Kairos's Oracle, you know, he changes the die.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a couple, on two occasions, players asked me this, and I wasn't sure how to rule it. But, and so I'd be interested in if only the Twitch chat can go definitive. But the interaction was, okay, the opponent of the Tzeentch player says, right, I want to, you know, I'm going to charge you now. I'm going to run to cap an objective. And Kairos goes, nope, I'm going to take your dice and turn it to a one. So in turn, the non-Kairos player was saying, okay, well, fine, I'm going to use a CP and have it as being treated as a six. That's the exact wording. So it's whether Kairos's dice can't be modified further once he's done it, but is treating something as a six the same as modifying it?
Oh, fascinating. Because, yeah, that's really interesting because you like, Kairos's exact wording is you change the result to a six. Is that right?
Kairos is essentially that you modify the dice and it can't be modified further, or you replace the dice. I believe that's the wording. I'll have to check it again, but it seemed to be that because there's normal wisdom that you can't modify a dice once it's been modified.
Well, no, you can't reroll. Like, so for example, like you used to be able to, like with a Starseer, for example, if you had some rerolls in your back pocket, or for some reason, if Kairos did something to you and chose a result, you could then re-roll it. But it's whether or not the CP choice is a re-roll or is re-choosing like, the result, which is it's a great one. So Nico apparently wrote a whole article about this, says Pete. Apparently.
Well, I think Nico... Okay. You can go definitive with Nico, so I'll find that article and be ready for the next one.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting. I'll tweet out a reply to it once we discover what it is. So everyone who's listening to this and knows Wargamer can find out what that is, and swing by tomorrow for show 200, where I'll prefix the show with that. I'll start off. I'll tell those two nerds on the 40K adjacent show like some AOS insider information. They'll be like, "Oh no!"
This is the kind of hot tea that we get involved in, right?
That's about it. They can't even buy digital books, and we're just here like, "Listen, can you choose the result twice? What?" It'll be fine. Anyway, thank you, Owen, for being on the show, for being yourself.
Thanks, man. Thanks for being you. And yeah, thanks for everyone who came at the weekend. It was fun.
Thank you to everyone on the Honest Wargamer, whether you've joined us live, whether you listen to the podcast, or if, most importantly, you support us on Patreon. So thank you for doing that. That does mean the world to us. I mean, we can keep doing this. So thank you. Please do join me again tomorrow for Stream Street Day 200, or join me tonight where the Age of Sigmar gang get together. And we talk about whether or not Gargants are brilliant. The answer, obviously, will be yes, because Nathan will say yes.
I think you have to let him have his moment, don't you? Let him have his Gargant moment.
You do. I want him to be good for him, but it's a destruction faction, so Games Workshop hates destruction, so they won't do a good faction for them. But one day, hopefully. Special shout out to Ziggy in the chat for helping with all of the overlays and helping us get those up to spec. So big love to you. You're brilliant. Thank you, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.